God, thank you for vulnerability, strength, not just strength in making decisions, but strength in telling our story, as did Brian right there. I just ask that we would all come to identify a bit more with him, not the specifics of that story, but the specifics and ability of being able to follow and surrender. So help my words be helpful to that end. And I'm just praying and trusting, God, that my words are right in line and an accurate reflection of your heart. And I pray these things according to the character, reputation, and name of Jesus. Amen. Man, intense stuff there. Awesome, awesome stuff. You know, who knows how any of us would respond in situations like that? I know for me, I would love to have the opportunity to walk away from a $300,000 job someday. That would be a great, that'd be a wonderful decision to be able to make someday, you know? But it wasn't just that. It was all on down the line, different things trying to connect with the decisions that Jesus would have. Now, we're at a turning point on our journey right now. First week, we talked about the historical and intellectual veracity for why we can trust that what's in the Bible actually was written and seen by firsthand witnesses. Last week, we looked at the broad overarching vast differences between Jesus' way and any other spiritual figure's way. Today we're going to dig more into the way of Jesus and some of the hard choices that you make when you get closer and closer to who God is. I was talking with a friend of mine recently who was at a local Starbucks, and he overheard some people talking, and he said there was a woman, it looked like a group of young professionals, and this younger woman was apparently trying to convince her friends to be a part of the reset journey. And I guess that she just was getting hammered by her friends. They were just, oh, it's ridiculous. That's, you know, how would you do that? How, you know, anybody who believes in Jesus, that he's anything more than a great teacher, is deluded. And they just kept kind of going on and on. And she just kind of kept standing her ground, just asking them to engage in the journey, I guess. And then finally, out of desperation, of course, he's at this point, he's virtually falling over. He's trying to hear everything. I guess finally, at the end of it, in desperation, she says, look, guys, you know me. You know me. I'm not crazy. I'm not an idiot. Sort of quieted them down. And then to punctuate the whole thing, one of the guys stood up and said, well, he had to leave. He said, well, you know, if this is true, it does change everything. And it is true. If Jesus is who he said he was, it changes everything. And the reason why we tend not to be seriously and engaging with him is we're afraid of how it might change our lives. You know, philosophers and counselors will tell us to know yourself, know thyself. Motivational speakers will tell us to improve ourselves. Hedonists and materialists will tell us to enjoy yourself. Spiritualists will tell you to transcend yourself. And then Jesus comes along and tells us, deny yourself. Surrender yourself. Total countercultural, totally the last thing that we would want, totally the last thing that we think would help, but yet the only thing that will get us to a new place. Jesus reset surrender. He reset the idea of what surrender was all about. Here's how he put it in the book of Luke. He says this. He says, you know, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross daily and follow me. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. He says, hey, you want to know who I am? You want to be like me? You want to experience my power? You want to experience a tight relationship with me and be able to transcend things you never thought you'd get over? Well, here's the way it works. You take my path, which means you take up your cross and you deny yourself. You surrender yourself. Now, today, when we talk about taking up our cross, we say things like, well, we all must have our cross to bear. We all have our things we got to deal with. I got my bad back. You have your mother-in-law. You have your warts. All of us have our, you know, our certain things that we just won't get over, and all of us have some hard times in your life. That's not what Jesus was saying. He was talking about a public form of humiliation. Even his listeners at this point didn't understand that he was going to die at the end of his life on a cross. Jesus, at this point in his life, might not even have known that he was going to die on a cross. But what he did know is his life was one of surrender and sacrifice, and he told people, this is the path to become like me. This is the path to spiritual power. To be on a cross meant that you were humiliated outside the city gates, and everybody could see you walking into and out of the city, hurling insults at you because of whatever decisions you had made. And so he says, hey, if you want to be like me, you will make decisions that will cause people to not think highly of you, that will cause people to think that you are crazy. And yet, if you want to be like me, you want to have my power, you must surrender yourself. Jesus reset surrender. What is surrender for us? Surrender is what you do only when you have no other options. You know, when you have no other options, okay, I'll surrender. When somebody else has their foot on your neck, okay, I'll surrender. When you can't do anything else, you just say, mercy, I give, I surrender, you win. Jesus said, no, it's totally different. It's not just when you have no other options. It's you make it your first option. It's the way in which you approach all life is I will surrender to the way of Jesus. And Jesus, as a great leader, never asks or expects anybody else to do something he's not already doing. And as you notice, as you are reading Luke, hopefully all of us are finished with it by now, you notice this. I mean, he's like, okay, fast for 40 days. Okay, I will surrender. Okay, I need to get outside away from people and just have time with my Heavenly Father. I will surrender to that and interact with him. In the Garden of Gethsemane, before he's killed, he says to God, I really don't want to do this, but not my will, but yours be done. I will surrender to you. And of course, as he's on the cross, if you've gotten that far and you remember, he says while on the cross in the gospel according to Luke, into your hands I commit my spirit. I surrender to you. From beginning to end, he's a leader who surrendered himself, who committed himself. And for us, if we want to have his power, if we want to make sense of life, if we want to get free from all the things that are enslaving us, if we want to get to a new place, the path is surrender. The path is denial. Not enlightenment, surrender, denial. One of my favorite stories of Jesus, one of the earliest stories I heard about him, was an interaction he had that still grips me to this day. It's one of the ways we really see his personality. I want to look at this today. Chapter 8 of Luke, and here is what happens. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him. And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. Who touched me? Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. But Jesus said, Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. Let's hit the pause button here. Jesus is starting to rise in public notoriety. He's starting to become a very popular figure. People are hearing about him speaking. They're hearing about him doing miracles. There's just too many stories to deny it. He's having an impact. People want to be around this guy at this point in life. So much so that wherever he goes, there's a flash mob happening. So he's walking around, boom, like tons of people just whoo, all around him. And he's walking, it's just kind of close and tight. And one woman comes out, it's a woman who's been bleeding. That's a nice way to say she's been menstruating for 12 years. Now, I've never had a period, don't ever plan on having a period. From what I understand, it's a bummer for 4 days. I cannot imagine what it would be like for 12 years. 12 years. She's not just dealing with the normal physical or hormonal things that are happening with that, but on top of that, in that cultural context, to have that happening would have a whole bunch of societal, communal, spiritual expectations that for you to be removed in that ancient society, you would remove yourself. You couldn't touch other people. You couldn't go in place of worship. That was the sort of cultural norm of the day. And so not only is she dealing with the difficulty of this bleeding for 12 years, but she is an isolated person. She is just feeling down. She's got to be in deep depression. She has got to be questioning all kinds of things about the existence of God, the existence of why she's even living on earth. But yet she hears that Jesus is around. This person who has word trickling throughout the entire region where strange, amazingly love-based things are happening around him. And she thinks to herself, Maybe I can get some of that miraculous stuff. Maybe I can get some of that love. Maybe I can get some of that touch. So she shows up and she fights her way to the crowd and just touches the edge of his garment. Maybe she touched the edge of her garment because she made one final leap through the flash mob and just was able to get a corner of his robe. Or maybe it's that she felt so beaten down and neglected, knew she shouldn't be touching anybody, that she couldn't bring herself to put his hand on her shoulder or hand on his back, and she just touched the edge of the garment. Immediately, blood stops. immediately, hormones go back into alignment. Immediately, everything, and she's just. And immediately, Jesus stops, says, "Hey, who touched me?" Peter's not normally the sharpest tool in the shed. He's like, "Hey, hello, McJesus, there's a flash mob running. What do you mean, who touched you? It could have been any of the 12 of us or all the other people. There is crazy amounts of people." No, this is different. I felt power go outside of me. I felt something just happened in the spirit realm. I felt it. Now you can imagine this woman. She hasn't touched anybody for 12 years. She hasn't been getting touched. She hasn't been getting noticed. She's already gone on the edge by coming out and somehow fighting through a crowd and touching him. And now all of a sudden, she's going to be identified and humiliated in front of this flash mob. I mean, she is just cowering. She feels very, very low. And she just says, I did. And here's how the story continues. The woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling, fell at his feet in the presence of all the people. She told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." The amazing love of Jesus. He breaks social norms. He breaks expectations. All in the name of love, as only God could do. Amazing, miraculous healing. Now, one of the things that I think about on this story is when Jesus says to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." What does that mean, your faith has made you well? See, most of us, we believe that our faith is all about my beliefs. Okay, it is my beliefs that has made me well. It's hunkering down and convincing myself that my beliefs are true, my beliefs. Well, if that's the case, then it's not really her faith that way. Otherwise, she wouldn't have come to see Jesus. If her faith made her well in terms of her convincing herself that she was going to be okay, then why didn't that happen when she was in the privacy of her own home? What about her faith is different here? Well, the difference is her faith is put into action when she surrenders. She surrenders. She comes and she bows herself before Jesus. It's not just convincing herself, "Oh no, I'm going to be healed. I'm going to be healed." She actually undergoes an act of surrender. And by coming and doing that, Jesus meets her and her life is forever changed. All growth, all spiritual growth, all further understanding of Jesus, all power, all anything you want to say, all of it comes one surrender at a time. One little itty bitty surrender at a time. And we tend to think there's just going to be this big, huge, cathartic, like spiritual moment where I'm going to lay it down. I'm just going to do this heroic spiritual thing. Maybe some of us will have that, but really the way it works is one small surrender at a time. This woman just decided, "I'm going to go out in public and I'm going to surrender myself. I'm going to deny what is culturally expected of me, deny my profile because this will be embarrassing for me. And I'm going to just surrender." One surrender at a time. I don't know about you, but for me, every single moment that I've grown has happened one surrender at a time. One surrender, always. Every time I've taken new ground, it's been because I've surrendered. It hasn't been because I've come into new knowledge. It's not because now more resolved. It's because I lay myself down. That's Jesus' revolutionary way. Those who go up must first go down. Those who want to love must bless those who are hurting you and cursing you. Those who want to experience freedom must first put yourself under the direction of God. It's always backwards. It's always countercultural. When I first started walking with Jesus, about age 15 or 16, I had a major moment of surrender that I had to mark myself with. I was really big into underage drinking, getting high, and I realized that I just couldn't do that, at least not until I was 21 any longer. Not the toking, the drinking. I just knew that I just couldn't. The toking had to go forever, but I just knew the drinking. This was just dishonoring my body. This was dishonoring God. This was just, it was a form of rebellion. It could only be bad, and there wasn't any sign that God liked this at all at 15, 16. So I had to stop. I just stopped underage drinking. I remember going to parties because this would make me a social outcast and trying to still have friendships, which I did maintain by having that red tumbler glass, and I'd pour apple juice in it, you know, you kind of, so you could hang out. They didn't know. They thought it was beer, but it was actually apple juice in that thing. And some friends respect me for that. Other ones did not respect me for it at all, but it didn't matter. I knew I had to surrender that. I knew my drinking activity, my partying ways needed to be surrendered, because if I didn't, I was really telling God, I don't want you. I want the approval of all my friends. I don't want you. And that was a little surrender, but was a major difference. One surrender of a time in my life. I was struck by Brian's story about how he was growing in generosity. When I decided to surrender that, I was in college. I'm thinking, gosh, 10% right off the top. Are you crazy? I'm on peanut butter and jelly 3 weeks out of the month. I would get money, and I was stupid in how I managed it. I would go out and eat high at restaurants for the first week, and all of a sudden there'd be no money left. I'm like, all right, looks like it's peanut butter and jelly the rest of the month. And I'd be doing that. I'm thinking, so what's this mean? I'm going to have peanut butter and jelly every single day. And in doing that, making that decision, I had to figure out whether or not I was going to order my finances around God and trust Him to make up differences and be more disciplined, all this stuff. But that right there, that was while a very small amount of money, given how much I was making then, that was a moment of surrender. And I grew and I went forward. And if I didn't do that, I was not going to grow. I was not going to go forward. In seminary, I was at two seminaries, going full-time at both of them, because one was on semesters, one was on trimesters. And so when I transferred, I was kind of overlapping, going to two at the same time for a short period of time. Why that happened? I was married, had a kid. I was working to put food in the food on the table. And in my theology class, systematic theology class, they had a requirement, the professor had a requirement that you would do so much outside reading and you keep a reading log. This was not reading that you were going to be tested on, but it could be any theological, spiritual reading. You just had to write down what it was and submit it on your log. And I was writing one night and reading, and I did about 30 minutes, and I said, man, life's been hard. Let's just put an hour and 30 minutes. Let's just put that one. So I put an hour and 30 minutes down in that log. And then as the semester went on, I found myself not doing 30 minutes, but saying, hey, let's do 2 hours. Let's put 2 hours down the log. Turned in my log at the end of the semester, all was good, but yet I realized that I was lying, I was cheating, and I needed to make it right, and I didn't want to, but I realized it was no longer an academic matter. This was a God matter, and so I sucked it up and went to Dr. Wayne Spear, and I said, you know, I cheated. I did not read all that I read, and I just need to confess that to you. And Dr. Spear forgave me, and you can forgive somebody, but still, and also still have consequences. By the way, you can there can be forgiveness, but still the course of consequences goes. And he chose not only to forgive me, but also to waive any consequences. I could have, should have flunked that class. I could have, should have been thrown out of the school. But it didn't matter. I thought about those things. What mattered is I needed to deny myself. And that day, that surrender, that was a surrender that still happens today. I mean, this last week, two different times, I realized, man, I need to go to just apologize to somebody. Didn't have the big ramifications that one had. But I realized I'm not forced into apologizing. I'm not forced into confessing. But just I sense and know that I need to make this right, and I just need to say this, and I need to surrender my pride and just say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And every time I do that, and realize I don't want to defend my position or justify why I did what I did, I just want to be humble and deny myself, even if I look stupid, the message of Jesus grows taller in me, and I get closer and closer to His image. One surrender at a time. And you know, these things aren't always painful either. You know, surrenders are also things that immediately are good for me. It's just that I don't believe it. Last night I was out with some friends and doing our credit card for the third of the bill, and someone said, no, I got this one totally. I'm like, oh, what? No. gonna pay my way. Gonna pay my way. I've had numerous ways that people have blessed us financially. Numerous ways that people have blessed us. And I always feel like, no, I need to work that off, or don't give it to me, give it to somebody else, or I have to, whatever it is. And yet Jesus says in the book of Matthew, freely you have received, freely give. That God's economy doesn't operate according to bartering, but give, receive. And every time I receive a blessing from somebody, it's a moment of surrender. It is. It's a good thing. It's a good thing, but still the pride might get in the way. It is a moment of surrender, and yet I still try to stay away from it. There's this thing that God has called a top 10 list, also known as the Ten Commandments. One of them is you should keep the Sabbath day holy. What it means, in essence, is one day out of seven needs to be about not working. One day out of seven, at least one day out of seven, needs to be getting out of your rhythms, resting, connecting with God. One day out of seven. And it's hard for me. It's probably hard for you. It's because we feel like, man, the world really needs me. I can't stop. I won't be able to get ahead. My boss might not be impressed. The project might not happen. And so when we stop, when we rest, we're surrendering and we're trusting that God is going to allow everything to be okay. And if things aren't going to be okay, that's okay because I need a rest. I am not a machine, a 24/7 machine. And if you refuse to do this, you're not surrendering. Not only that, you're also hurting yourself. I guarantee you, I get sick less than you. I sleep well, I take this off, and so I'm actually winning in this. I'm being helped, but yet it's hard because it's counterculture. Wait a minute, whoa. You mean it's good for you to do nothing? Yes, it is. It's countercultural, it's upside down, but it is the way of Jesus. Every time I rest, every time I sleep, every time I take a Sabbath, do nothing, it is a moment of surrender, and I go forward. Not only does my physical self go forward, but I send a message to God, say, God, there's things that are in your job description, not mine. I can't control everything. Think of control. Speaking of control, how many of us are in a small group or you or somebody else has all what's already come out is that they're having a hard time forgiving themselves or you receiving forgiveness? How many of us in your group so far has come up that somebody has a hard time like believing they're forgiven? Anybody? Any groups? Just anybody? Yeah, a number of us. You know, why is that? Here's what I think. I think it's because, you know, when I forgive somebody, I'm basically in control. I'm in control and I'm the superior. So when someone comes to me and they've hurt me, if I forgive them, I'm still in control. I'm holding the cards. I'm the superior. It's relatively easy for me. But to receive forgiveness, to receive grace, for someone to tell you, hey, this awful thing that you did, I don't hold it against you. Don't worry about it. Hey, this thing that you keep beating yourself up, it's over. It doesn't bother me. Let it go. Why is it that we can't receive that forgiveness and grace? I think it's because we don't want to be the inferior. See, but when I receive grace, it's an act of surrender. Here's crazy. Receiving grace is an act of surrender. Receiving grace, and we don't receive grace, we're still trying to be God. Receiving grace is an act of surrender, one act at a time. Now, Jesus's economy, again, is so upside down. He says there's a different way, a different path. Here's how he said it in Luke chapter 6. To those who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt. Jesus says, don't let your clothes define you. Don't be about your clothes. If someone wants your shirt, give them your shirt. In fact, give them your cloak. Because you shouldn't be about how you look to people. Just turn that thing upside down. And if someone insults you, slaps you on the cheek, that's what it meant to be insulted. If somebody insults you, don't worry about what somebody else thinks about you. Worry about what God thinks about you and just allow people to insult you. In fact, if somebody hates you, somebody's trying to do you harm, don't return evil for evil. Pray for them. Bless them. That is the upside down surrendering way of Jesus.
Well, I grew up in a very divided, dysfunctional household. My mom was an alcoholic, drank nearly every single day of the year, minus a holiday or two. And I didn't know anything about God or Jesus growing up. We didn't have a Bible in the house. I struggled a lot with my relationship with my mom. I was always felt like I wasn't good enough. I was always following her around the house to make sure she didn't drink. I couldn't have friends over to play because she was constantly drunk. I mean, she'd get so drunk that she'd pass out at the dinner table, or she'd throw up her meal. She'd fall asleep in her chair. She'd fall off the toilet and just be completely wasted, laying in there on the floor. And I remember vividly climbing over her to get my toothbrush and brush my teeth. And I just knew that there had to be something better than that for me. And my father actually died when I was 19. He was 52 and died suddenly of a heart attack. So my rock, my best friend, I lost him at the age of 19. That is when I started turning in desperation for something more. I couldn't depend on my mom. I couldn't depend on my brother. I definitely got most of my self-worth from my community, my school community, my friends, but I was still missing a big, huge part in my life. I went to her house to tell her that my dad died. I felt like I was honoring her, and I didn't even know the command at that time to honor your mother and father, but I just really felt that inside. Went to her house, told her she didn't have any emotion except for, her reaction was, I need to call my lawyer. I mean, the divorce is not finalized yet. So I walked out of there without a hug or anything from my own mother after my dad died, and that was really difficult. And that was when I absolutely said, she is not going to have any power over me. I was going to get through this on my own. I was strong enough. I could do this myself. And I thought I was doing a pretty good job at that. And then I was more free about it, because I really felt like I needed to tell my story in order to heal. I felt like, once again, it was all about me and my strength. And if I was strong enough to tell my story, then this healing would just magically occur. My absolute healing started about a year ago when I was on my small group medical mission trip out in South Africa. And I went there and was completely broken and didn't realize how broken I was. I was in bondage. I felt this heavy burden, this heavy weight that I was carrying around, and I couldn't put my finger on what the weight was, what the burden was, who I was in bondage to. I just wanted freedom, and I didn't even know what freedom meant in the Bible. In South Africa, I just prayed about it, and that was the first time that I heard ever that I needed to have somebody else pray for me. And that night, they all prayed on me, and I'd love to say it was that moment after everybody prayed for me that I had this amazing sense of freedom and everything was fine and hunky-dory, but it wasn't. And now I look back at it, and I'm like, that was just the starting point of realizing what being obedient and following Jesus' commands will do for you in your life. Another friend of mine in that small group came up to me the next day and said, you know, I just want to challenge you with something. I don't think you should share your story anymore, at least not right now, because you're in so much pain and you're so vulnerable that is where Satan is creeping in and kind of attacking you. And I said, wow, that makes complete sense, because over the last, I mean, my dad's been gone now 13 years. I haven't talked to my mom in 13 years. Why would the story get increasingly difficult to tell? And so that seemed like a logical explanation to me. And I said, that's a piece of cake. I cannot share my story. I was just thinking this whole time that I needed to wear it on my sleeve so that the more I told it, the quicker I would heal from it. And then the same friend came up to me the next evening and said, you know, I was thinking about you, and I was wondering if you ever prayed for your mom. I'm like, the mom that caused me so much pain in my past, the mom that the only thing I gave her credit for was giving birth to me. I mean, I couldn't even swallow that. I couldn't comprehend, wrap my mind, my heart around praying for somebody that I didn't like, that I really didn't care what happened to her in her life. He said, you know, Jesus says in the Bible, you're supposed to pray for your enemies. And so I think you should think about that. Just simply pray blessings for her and see where that takes you. And I did. That was probably another one of the most difficult things I've ever done. But the prayer started out simple, and I just prayed blessings for her, and then they would kind of gradually grow into, wow, I have a softened heart. I just pray that my mom starts to feel that in her life, that she has a softened heart or sees some kind of light or happiness in her life. I absolutely think that that this is sitting in front of the camera an act of obedience. And I knew I just needed to surrender what I was going to say today because there are so many details and I didn't know how detailed I was going to get. And I didn't know, since this is the first time that I'm really sharing my story since the mess I was a year ago, I didn't even know how emotionally I was going to hold up. I'm in a much better place than I was a year ago, and I know it's because I was obedient. I know it's because I just gave it to God and said, I am so desperate. I can't take any more weight on me. I need to give you some of it. I see that we're supposed to live by His word. We're supposed to live by what He did, and we're supposed to live as a reflection of Jesus. And so when I read scripture in the Bible now, it takes a whole new meaning for me. I'm looking at it and saying, wow, Jesus healed these people physically, and He was there to emotionally heal these people. He forgave people of their sins, and that's what I need to do. That's what He commanded us to do. I actually can say that I have forgiven her. I actually pray now that there will be a day that she calls me or tries to contact me, that there will be a day that she feels that her daughter actually loves her and that she is worth something.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. See, the normal ways this world would say, hey, that's your private business. Don't tell anybody. Normal ways this world might say, hey, that's fine. It's your story. Just be sharing your story all the while, just pouring more gasoline on it. The normal ways this world would say, hey, you have a right to be upset. You have a right. That's emotional abuse to actually love somebody that's done these things to you. But Jesus says, no, that's the way it works. You surrender. My way is the only way you get out. That is the way of surrender. Praying blessings on those who have hurt you. Crazy, crazy, upside down, backwards, not the way you'd want, but yet the only way you're going to get out of it. It's the way of surrender. It is the way of Jesus. It's the way, and it's the only way that will work for you. I could just go on and flag after flag, sticking more. I mean, just name. You think your situation is unique, and you think no, you couldn't surrender that. You know, yeah, that's why you're not going anywhere. That's why you're stuck right now. That's why you've got to find some way to think your way out of this, because surrender and denial is hard. It oftentimes has benefits on the other end. Oftentimes, not always. Don't think of this as some good luck charm. I do this, I get paid another way. No, you think of it as this is simply the way of Jesus. And if I want to know Jesus and have any understanding of Him and sense of connection and sense of power that comes from Him, I will stick up my flag of surrender. Jesus was constantly having people trying to catch him in mistakes, specifically and especially the religious people, because he was kind of encroaching on their territory. People started understanding his view of God versus their old ways of God. And so they kept trying to find him doing something wrong. And if they could find the nation of Rome thinking that he was doing something wrong, then they could have Rome kill him. And so they were hoping that he was going to be telling people, don't pay your taxes to Rome, because this would have obviously been an offense and caused him to be killed. So they sent a spy one day, or spies one day, to question him. And here's what happens. Teacher, we know that you speak and teach what is right. Everyone thinks Jesus speaks and teaches what, I mean, that's fine. But when you actually come to surrender, very few people ever do that. And that you show partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Now, here's the deal. Is it right for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? He saw through their duplicity and said to them, show me a denarius, whose portrait and inscription are on it. Caesar's, they replied. He said to them, then give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. They were unable to trap him in what he had said there in public, and astonished by his answer, they became silent. They were astonished, like, man, he just talked his way out of it again. This guy's so brilliant. He didn't give us a yes-no answer. What he does is he gives them a deeper meaning answer. All of us know or may know that it's illegal for us to defame or deface American currency because we don't actually own that. That's the government's money. It's just on loan to us to keep the economy in circulation, and we can't deface it. In the same way back in Rome, Caesar owned all the gold. And he said, okay, well, look at that thing. Whose image is on it? Well, Caesar's. That's right. It's Caesar's. So give it back to Caesar. But for God, give God's whatever's God's. Where's God's image? Where's God's image? Very first teaching in the Bible, book of Genesis, the first significant teaching is that men and women are created in the image of God. Men and women are created. Where's God's image? On you. On you. God isn't looking for your money. He's not looking for your time. He's He's not looking for your dating life. He's not looking, all those things come under the overall thing. What is he looking for? He's looking for you. Jesus says, God wants you. God wants you to have a fully surrendered denial life. You. That's what God wants. You. And how do you get to that place? One surrender at a time. And it might be that there's a sort of a heaviness in here today. It might be because a lot of us see what that next thing is. Surrender it. God is, if this happens, we're praying that you would just give us that image right now. We've been wrestling with it. Many of us have. Image of a person, image of that object, of that activity. You've given us a mind and an imagination that can picture things, because that way you can communicate to us and we can communicate to you, because a picture is worth a thousand words. So as we have that person, image, situation, action, pray that we would plant that little white flag. We'd surrender it.